Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I'm your host, John Schmidt, and I will be, again, taking you out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures. This is our fifth episode to date, and those of you who have been week-to-week listeners will recognize that so far we've stayed largely at the big picture, and our intent has been clear here and intentionally been focused on building some dimension of a wake-up level of understanding about drivers of this era of extraordinary change coming our way, and the intention to begin building a base of perspective that will help us to prepare and enable more clear and precise action as leaders across society. And this week, I think it's appropriate. I'd like to bring forward a message from one of our listeners that I think gives us a bridge into our guest today, Sean, and to, at the same time, provide some sort of a through line from where we've been. This is a message that I got from Maggie here in the U.S., living in California, and I think it's a good one. Maggie says, I watched Chris Martinson's Crash Course, and I'm a changed person. I feel centered. Now I have a context for what I've been experiencing. I've been influenced by Gore's Inconvenient Truth and by the Pachamama Symposium, but with both, looking out, there was always a certain way to get off the hook. The Crash Course addresses the U.S. mindset concretely, not abstractly, and it's not about an abstract world that we're living in. I see how I have been participating in something bigger than I understood. I've misread circumstances, not from a lack of sincerity to see, but what I was looking at was insufficient. This has been the perfect experience of a wake-up and waking up. And with that, I'd like to just underscore the nature of Zoomed, the focus we've brought forward, where we've been, where we're going, that perhaps, in the words of one of the great wisdom traditions, that our work here encompasses three dimensions: a right view, that view that can shape things for us, right intention, in terms of the underpinning drive behind it, and right action, which is really where we're trying to mobilize ourselves collectively to go. If we don't see this larger view and the world with its richness properly, as it actually is, at the level of complexity and wholeness involved, we have less hope and less means for us to really initiate the real breakthroughs involved. And the question that I've been trying to underpin in the previous shows is, what is this right view when it comes to life in this evolutionary age, this extraordinary change that we're heading into? Right, not from a one right way perspective, but rather how do we take this whole view, recognizing the rich array of multiple perspectives involved? Personally, I think we're at a collision point of the old models and the new, and a movement from one way of living to another. And it's a whole view that's essential, I think, toward this movement. And that's where we come into today's guest, who I think is center stage when it comes to a whole view and really helping us build this perspective. Today I have the esteemed Sean Esbjorn Hargens, who's joined us. Sean, welcome. He is a PhD, an associate professor, and founding chair of Integral Theory Program at John F. Kennedy University and the founding director of the Integral Research Center. Sean's a leading practitioner in integral theory, which we'll talk about. He's the most published author who has been applying it to topics including sustainability, education, ecology, consciousness, science, and religion. Sean also, and I've got it on my desk, has completed a new book along with environmental philosopher Michael Zimmerman entitled Integral Ecology, Uniting Multiple Perspectives on the Natural World. Sean, I'm really happy to have you here today. Welcome to Zoomed.
Thanks so much, John. It's great to be here. I've been very excited to see what you've been doing with Zoomed, and even more excited to be part of it now.
Well, thanks, Sean. And I'm really serious when I say this about WholeView. And I think your book and the orientation to uniting multiple perspectives is a rich one, even beyond integral ecology. I think it's rich in its application to the world we're living in. And as we start, let me just say, Sean, just as a reflection, many know that have been following the show that I'm a lover of talk radio, have been for many years. I really follow an awful lot of it, both from the mainstream and the traditional commentary, but I've really been struck more recently as we're seeing everywhere about the viewpoint clashes and the confrontive attacks involved, and a lot of that in the left and the right. But maybe, Sean, help us today get a sense of really what's going on and maybe some broad perspective that integral theory and your work can help bring to this. How would you start thinking? How to make sense of this, Sean?
Yeah, it really is, I think, one of the primary issues that we're wrestling with today, and that is the vast array of perspectives. And there's a lot of ways to think about multiple perspectives. And, you know, because there's different worldviews and their respective perspectives. There's different disciplines and the associated perspectives with those disciplinary endeavors. And so there's a lot of context in which multiple perspectives are occurring. And so one of the reasons I've been drawn to integral theory is it provides a meta framework in which to really hold and understand the complexity of perspectives and to start to be able to identify patterns of perspectives as well as points of contact between perspectives. And, you know, because wherever you look today, you know, we're a global community. We're, you know, there's so many ways in which we're intersecting with each other across the planet, and there's various, you know, levels of mutual understanding, but more often than not, there's all kinds of varieties of misunderstanding. And so I think one of the great starting points of tackling any of the big issues, whether it's poverty or climate change or our failing educational systems, is to begin to try and make sense of the multiple perspectives that are involved with any one of those issues. The integral model, as you know, is quite a complex model, and so there's ways in which you can scale it down to make it very simple and applicable to a variety of situations, or you can step into kind of the full glory of it in all of its multidimensionality and tackle, you know, really philosophical or, you know, multi-layered issues. And that's one of the strengths of the integral model, in my experience, is this scalability. One of the ways that I've worked with the integral model to help create a simple approach to working with multiple perspectives is the framework that I call the who times the how times the what. And what's great about this kind of simple approach is that the who represents, you know, the individual and our various perspectives and the different ways that we arrive at our perspective. It kind of starts with the individual or the I. Whereas the how highlights the different techniques or practices, the methods, the disciplines, the ways we approach interacting with reality. And there's, you know, such a variety of those techniques and practices out there, even within a discipline like biology or education. And then the what is highlighting the areas of reality that we are focusing on or that we're taking to be prominent or primary in any given situation. And so by recognizing that any, you know, event or phenomenon or dynamic is the combination of an individual taking a certain perspective, taking up a certain practice or approach to reality, and then focusing on a particular aspect of reality, this gives us a really, you know, usable framework in which to make sense of the multiplicity of viewpoints that are out there and disciplinary approaches and understandings of any given topic. So with this kind of framework, we can go into any number of contexts and start to make sense of the many kind of conflicting and also, you know, aligned viewpoints that are occurring in relationships to some topic.
So let me just take that and make this really kind of almost visual for some of our listeners, Sean,
yeah.
That if we're talking about the who, then we might even be talking about the individual and the set of the lens or the glasses from which they see the world, the lens from which they see the world, the perspective they're taking from the way that they individually have developed some means of understanding the world. So they're looking at the world through their glasses and through their lens, and they might at the same time be looking then how they might even be, I'm using your example here on the front of your cover, they might be looking through a microscope,
yeah.
the how they're doing it, to be very scientific in its orientation. In the book, you have this beautiful picture of a frog underneath it, and it might be the domain that we're exploring right here of the what relative to the frog. Is that somewhat what you're trying to say, too?
Exactly. Another way to link it to something you said in your opening remarks is you mentioned the triadic combination of right view, right intention, and right action.
Yes.
One way to think of that in this context is right view is the who. It's the viewpoint that we have. And right intention is kind of how we go about interacting with reality as a result of who we are or what our view is. And then right action is kind of what's happening in the world. It's kind of the what. It's like what we're focused on, what's concretely occurring in the world around us. So that's a loose way to link it to something you were saying earlier.
Yeah, that's great, Sean. So we've only got a minute here. I think this is going to be useful for us to try to unpack some more and talk a little bit about the nature of it. Maybe we can start in a couple of minutes with the what and take an example of what we're doing there. You'd make your choice on what might make sense on that from what seems comfortable to try to bring it to life, and then we can explore more of the dimension of the who's involved here. But I'm curious, even in the 30 seconds we have left here, Sean, just a comment or two. Why is this important today, as I was describing the conflictual dimensions of this, people getting locked up? Is it because they're sort of embedding themselves in one view and one perspective and then clashing out of that?
Well, there's multiple perspectives within the category of who, as well as multiple perspectives within the category of how, as well as multiple perspectives in terms of the category of what we should be focused on. And that's where a lot of the conflict comes from in the various, you know, difficult issues we face globally and locally, is you don't get an alignment between the who's, the how's, and the what's. And so people are taking up different perspectives in relationship to the who, and then they might be using the same methods or techniques, but then they might be focused on different what's. And so by using this framework, we can start to see where are the alignments and where are the synergies, as well as where are the leverage points for helping to create mutual understanding.
Oh, that's great, Sean. Well, that's a good bridge to where we're going to go from here. Let's take a short break. This is Zoomed. Join Sean when we come back in just a minute.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880, or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
Self-leadership is more important than corporate leadership. In the hustle and bustle world we live in, we need to be reminded that in all failures and successes, we are the common denominators. Each week, let Daniel Gutierrez help bring you the tools you need to manage self-leadership, resulting in self-success. Make your mark in your industry. Make sure you listen to Right Here, Right Now, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoom Leadership.
Okay, John Schmidt here back with Sean Esbjorn Hargens, and we're continuing our discussion about the whole view that might be helpful, as well as the multidimensionality of it. And Sean, I really pointed us before the break into the arena of what, and what we're looking at, and how we might describe that. Let me pick up on that, start to give us more of a perspective of how we might begin to consider that more richly.
Yeah, I mean, as you can imagine, reality is pretty complex. You know, there's a lot of layers to it. There's a lot of ways to look at reality and understand reality. One of the things that integral theory does is it provides a simple framework from which we can understand the four basic dimensions of reality. And in this simple, you know, four quadrant approach to reality is a result of 30 years of cross-cultural as well as cross-disciplinary research as to what are the recurring patterns and emphases of different disciplines such that we could identify some of the basic irreducible components of reality. And so integral theory presents what it calls these four quadrants. And real simply, we can think of the first quadrant or the upper left quadrant as the terrain of experience, an individual subjectivity. The lower left quadrant, or the terrain of cultures, is the intersubjectivity or shared experience across people, within people. And these two quadrants represent the interiority or the insides of individuals and the insides of groups. And then on the other side of the matrix, you have the exterior quadrants, the upper right quadrant being the terrain of behaviors. This is the domain of empirical sciences, we generally think of it, with an emphasis on behavior and physiology, chemistry, biology, things you can see and observe, behaviorism and so forth. Then the last quadrant, the lower right quadrants, the quadrant of systems, the terrain of systems. And here you have the complex ways in which parts interact to create wholes, economic systems, political systems, educational systems, social systems. And one of the things that integral theory has noted over the years is that within different disciplines, be it psychology or economics or ecology, you tend to see sub-schools within each of those disciplines who specialize in each of these four terrains. And so there's this kind of recurring fractal pattern where these four basic terrains of reality, or what we're calling the what, keep showing up and keep reminding us that they're irreducible, and that if we don't include all of them, we're actually leaving out an important part of reality.
And so this is interesting, I think, Sean, to consider this in the way that we're looking at big issues in the world. So let's take something. We're talking a break. Maybe climate change is a way to look at that. If we consider these four terrains, then, where is the attention that we see in the world on an issue like climate change?
Yeah, climate change is a great example because it's what we see happening with climate change is very typical of how we tend to approach many of our big issues. And that is, there's an overemphasis on the exterior or right-hand side of the quadrant framework. In other words, there's an emphasis on the behaviors of individuals, you know, encouraging people to reduce their personal carbon footprint, the governmental programs to develop behavioral incentives, the efforts to plant trees for carbon sequestering, eating less meat. All of those are kind of personal behaviors that are important in addressing climate change. The bulk of the conversation, though, tends to focus on the systemic aspects in terms of developing renewable energies, global security issues, as well as, issues of protecting endangered species, so biodiversity issues, Looking at establishing international agreements between various national, interests, restructuring the auto industry, increasing energy efficiency in a number of different sectors. So generally, the solutions that are proposed tend to be heavily weighted to the lower right. And here's the rub. To accomplish those solutions, in my experience, and in approaching this from a meta viewpoint, we actually need to enlist the understandings and insights from the other three terrains, the other quadrants. So in order to solve our lower right or systemic issues, we need to be drawing on culture, we need to be drawing on people's personal experience, we need to be looking at their individual behaviors.
So how does that actually play out on this issue then? I mean, I know that in November later this year that you and others are going to be involved in the State of the World Forum, where the issue of climate change is on a real forum for discussion with a very large body of people. And coming in, I would suspect that it would be an orientation to the science, to the targets, to all the structural dimensions. So if we were to take that out then, Sean, you know, what actually would be involved if we were thinking about it and bringing in the interiority into the equation here? And how does that, what does that add to it? And how do we really consider that in this climate change question?
Yeah, that's a great question. Many of us, many individuals from different sectors, different disciplines, different cultures can agree on something like, we need to develop renewable energy. Like, that's kind of a no-brainer. Pretty much everyone recognizes the importance of developing renewable energy sources. So there's agreement in this case with respect to the what as it relates to the systemic aspect of the quadrant framework. What's challenging, though, is we often don't agree on how to go about doing that, right? There's a multiple perspectives with relationship to the how. And there's also a lot of perspectives with the who, different worldviews that see issues of renewable energy very differently, whether they be traditional worldviews or the more modern empirical worldviews or the more postmodern environmental worldviews. And so one of the things that the State of the World Forum and other initiatives that are using the integral model to support tackling some of these complex issues is, looking at how can we make use of and enlist our understandings of our own psychologies, different worldviews and value systems, cultural dynamics, religious understandings. How can we bring those into the fold in order to create some alignment with the who and the how in order to have success with the alignment we already have with respect to the what?
Interesting, Sean. And this really brings to mind to me even a show a couple of weeks ago with James Quilligan, different issue on this case, the economics. And as James was describing it, how we're tied up so much in, as you're describing it here, the right-hand quadrants and how the issues of the global commons and how we actually go about those. But even more so, how do we actually value some of the wealth that's outside of the arena of just monetizing everything and putting it into an equation of demand and supply and putting an actual tangible dollar value on it, it's missed. And it seems to me you're talking about, in some respects, a similarity to that, that without bringing in these quadrants, this interiority, you're really missing something that's very fundamental to the nature of who we are, and that is how we actually engage. What is the nature of who we are as individuals and collectively in that interior space? How that really comes into the equation, into the tangible what? Seems to me a lot of similarities there. Does that feel the same to you?
It does, and I've been following James Quilligan's work for a number of years now and have always appreciated, what he brings to the table with respect to economies and understanding economic realities from an integral vantage point. And he actually uses the four quadrants in the work he does to highlight, as you're noting, the psychological and cultural underpinnings of economic systems, and that to really make some shifts within those, dynamic systems, we need to be including an understanding as to the psychological and cultural aspects that are very much part of the social and systemic qualities of our monetary systems.
And Sean, I noticed in your book you've got actually one of the early chapters, even in part one, that's talking about the return to this interiority, bringing that into the equation.
Right.
I'm wondering, it's just in the nature of society, particularly in the West and how it's evolved, how have we biased this systems and this right-hand side to the detriment of the interiority?
I think we have, and I think there's a lot of evidence pointing in that direction. It's one of the points that integral theory makes is that our behaviors come with experiences, and our systems come with cultures, that they co-arise or they co-mingle, that they exist together. And what you see time and time again in how modernity has progressed and how our disciplinary nature of inquiry has continually reified the emphasis on behaviors and systems, or the right-hand exterior aspects. But as we've been exploring here in the show today, to really understand the depth of those exterior realities, you have to include the interiority. And so that's why Michael and I, time and time again throughout the book, talk about the return to interiority, the need to include interiority. And we often do indirectly or intuitively or in a variety of ways. And as I mentioned, a lot of the disciplines, even economic approaches, are trying to include the interiors in one way or another because they recognize the importance of it, but they often lack a meta framework to really help them figure out how to do it effectively. And that's one of the things the integral model provides.
Well, it sounds like it's, in many respects, a useful means of really helping shape and understand the multiplicity of perspectives. And in some respects, it brings more of a meta view to this. But it strikes me as one other thing here, Sean, and that is that if you're talking about the interiority, you're talking about the nature of who we are and the consciousness of our very individuality and the collective consciousness that flows through it. And without that, it seems like it's, some respect, just looking at life as something arm's length, as this something separate from who we are and not connected to the very nature of who we are as the creators of these systems.
Yeah, exactly. And if you talk to, most anyone, they will agree with you that, we need to include psychology, we need to include culture, we need to include systemic understandings. Most people can appreciate the importance of including those different aspects. But what we lack now, currently, as a culture and as a global culture, is a way of doing that, of including the psychology and the cultural dimensions, including the who, if you will, into what we're doing. And that's one way that the integral model, I think, is helping address some of these bigger issues, is it works off the intuition that so many of us have that, we got to include all of these components to have the whole view of the whole world, as you were saying earlier. And it actually provides a methodology, a way of enacting the whole view by including the who, including the individual and their consciousness, as well as the cultural dimensions of consciousness and group understandings.
And maybe as we're bringing this segment to a close here, Sean, where does the pushback come from, looking at the world from this more expansive view? What's in it to view it in a more limited view? What's your sense of that?
Yeah, there's two main areas in my experience. One is that while, a system scientist or even an economist or a climate change scientist will agree that we should include the train of experience or include the train of cultures, their disciplinary training is such that they really don't know how, and they often will cling to their disciplinary understandings at the expense of kind of a more open posture toward trying to explore how we might bring in some of these other dimensions. So, in other words, there's kind of a quadrant absolutism that people tend to cling to the preferred terrain of reality that we've been discussing that they've been trained in. And even though, you know, if you sit down and have coffee with them, they see the value of the other terrains, but professionally they'll continue kind of overemphasizing at the expense of the others the one terrain that they have, you know, the most experience in. So that's a big area of resistance. People like their particular quadrant. The other area is around worldviews and kind of the debates between traditional views, modern views, and postmodern views, and just trying to get people to appreciate the existence of those three distinct perspectives and then how to understand and work with those different sensibilities.
And that's a good place, I think, for us to continue in the next segment of our conversation here, Sean, is to go more to the who in some of those stages of development, so to speak, and how they evolved.
Great.
Come back in a few minutes. Join me with Sean, and we'll continue the conversation. We're on Zoomed. Thanks a lot.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
Owen Hodge Show. Are you ready for some football? Well, here it comes. The Owen Hodge Show is bringing you the funniest hour in sports talk radio. This action-packed show is hosted by the outspoken fullback, Big Hodge, and the knowledgeable defensive back, Odie. This show will focus on the NFL, but touch on all things sports. Owen Hodge will provide you with a true player's perspective that'll give you insight, make you think, and definitely make you laugh. Owen Hodge have accumulated six championship rings, so obviously they know things. Check out the Owen Hodge Show at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Network. Owen Hodge Show. From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's avastoneconsulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back again with John and Sean here on Zoomed. And Sean, let's continue where we left before. And after building some of the perspectives around the what, and as you started to move toward the nature of the who, and I was describing with the somewhat the glasses or the lenses that we're seeing the world from the individual interior standpoint, give us a little more sense of that and how that plays out and how we can make that tangible and maybe an example.
Yeah, great. You know, similar to how the integral model provides the four quadrants as a way of taking the complexity of reality and kind of distilling out the four kind of primary dimensions that need to be considered in an integral approach. A similar move is made with respect to the who or individuals and cultural worldviews. And there's a ton of evidence from a variety of disciplines and approaches that keep highlighting how there are at least three or four major worldviews that exist within ourselves often in some combination, as well as within our communities and our nations. And these three major worldviews have a variety of different names attached to them, but for our purposes, I think it'll be fine to highlight them in the following way. The one is the traditional worldview, kind of a conservative worldview, often kind of, you know, you can think of kind of the conservative Christian or, you know, the old-timer kind of viewpoint, you know, small town, basic, you know, family values, that kind of thing. You know, doesn't really like big business, doesn't know much about, you know, the world in a global sense, doesn't really care to often. And then there's the modern worldview, you know, of business and scientific rationalism, and kind of here you have more kind of the city dweller, you know, and the urbanite and the, you know, the young entrepreneur, and, you know, the real can be even in an atheist or agnostic sensibility, because there's an emphasis on rationality and science. And then there's the postmodern worldview, you know, which tends to emphasize diversity and multiplicity, and ecological values are often articulated. You know, so these are three major worldviews that show up repeatedly both within Western cultures and the other cultures. And then there's a fourth emerging worldview that has also been documented, and that's what I refer to as an integral worldview, which recognizes the strengths and values of each of those other three worldviews. Typically, you know, the postmodern environmentalists hate big business and they think government's stupid, right? You know, as one example. And then likewise, you know, business often thinks, you know, environmentalists are, you know, just a bit off their rocker and a bit nutty in their hippie-esque ways. And, you know, and they think government's too slow because they want this fast-paced movement, right? So each of the worldviews tends to have some degrading view of the other two worldviews. Well, what makes the integral approach so powerful for me is it avoids getting into the fray like that, and it recognizes that each of these worldviews has a very powerful sensibility that needs to be appreciated and included in any solution building, you know, multi-sector solution building. And so the integral view recognizes that all those worldviews, including the integral worldview, has pluses and minuses, and the effort is to try to bring the pluses to the table and recognize the minuses so that we can identify the points of synergy across the different worldviews.
So it's interesting, Sean. It comes to mind here, and I, you know, we don't have a political stance at all here on Zoomed in terms of left or right and so forth. But what you're describing to me seems also to play out. That as I listen to Sean Hannity lately, or Rush Limbaugh, that you're getting a very aggressive one right way view, the way I was describing the show.
Right.
And it feels like that's what can get caught up in these different worldviews. That it is not embracing the other views and considering it as legitimate. It's really just sort of an isolation, or said my view versus the other viewed. In some cases, not even black and white. It's either black or it's white, but it's not both.
Right.
It seems to me that's what you're describing here in some respects.
Yeah.
I'm wondering at the same time if you've got an example of where this might play out and how we can see the worldviews in action in anything you've been experiencing lately.
Yeah, in the book, you know, we give a number of examples. There's over 30 examples from around the globe of how individuals in various ways have worked with the integral model and included this understanding of the who, and by including these different perspectives, the traditional, modern, and postmodern viewpoints, have made important progress in different issues, often where little progress had been made before. One of the examples that I particularly appreciate comes from a gentleman up in Canada, Stephen Martineau, and he's been developing an approach to integral forestry. And there's, in Canada, they allow for what's called community forests, where a community can organize itself and petition the government to be given stewardship over a large tract of land, of forests and trees and various watersheds, and then be in charge of maintaining that. And there's a particular area in British Columbia where Stefan's located and has been working, where this community for over two decades had been dogged with all kinds of infighting between you know, the loggers, the kind of local Christian groups, the old-timers, the businesses, the new businesses coming in, the scientific ecologists. There's also an artist community and kind of a, you know, a hippie community. There are also environmentalists. And, you know, so there were a lot of conflicting perspectives that could be understood in relationship to these three major worldviews. And the British government, British Columbia government, had come in 9 separate times and thrown a bunch of money at this problem, trying to create some solutions for managing the forest in this area that would, you know, work for the community. In each case, it wasn't a pretty sight, shall we say. Well, Stefan, armed with the integral model, began a several-year process of connecting with individuals and leaders within the community who largely represented these different worldviews, the traditional worldview, the modern worldview, the postmodern worldview. And he enlisted these individuals who were able to be open to the other worldviews. Even though they were primarily anchored in their own worldview, they were able to listen to and appreciate some of the value of the other worldviews. So he began identifying these individuals and bringing them into this idea, this vision he had of a community forest. And after several years of this kind of networking and going to a lot of meetings and so forth, they petitioned the government and successfully achieved the rights to manage this forest. And there's, you know, it's been kind of a breakthrough example of a community who was bogged down in conflicting perspectives, who, when worked with in an integral approach that took time to align these different viewpoints and appreciate the insights and understandings that each of these worldviews had in relationship to the forest, was able to then create a leadership platform in which some things could happen that had never happened before in that community.
And is that to say, Sean, that out of this process and sort of an integral orientation to it, that there were new ideas that came out that both appealed to the individual sort of the separate interests and perspectives, but took it up to a higher level in terms of solution?
Exactly.
Is that what happened there?
Yeah, you know, give and take on both sides. There's also the process of translating. You know, someone who can help translate the values and perspectives of the traditional worldview into terms that the modern worldview can hear or understand. Because sometimes it's just a semantic clash where one worldview is hearing the other worldview in a way that's not actually very accurate. And so to have someone there who can mediate and translate and point out the common interests and the points of contact so that people start to see that they're not actually on opposite sides of the fence. While there might be some important differences and in some cases irreconcilable differences, that there's enough shared ground that people can come together and actually synergize at a higher octave.
Great word, translation there, which is actually translating into language. But it sounds to me like to do that, there's also an awareness of some of the different contours that you're describing, the traditional contour, modern, the postmodern. It's understanding some of those contours. And from a leadership standpoint, it sounds like part of what might be involved there is to begin to get a better understanding of not only yourself,
yeah,
but understanding some of these other contours and how to engage in those kind of conversations. I'm curious, the fellow that you're referring to there is pulling that together. Would you say that it was he representing more of that integral view and that perspective that he's bringing to the process as a whole?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's written an article and on it, and you know, we refer to his work in the book, and he explicitly is using the integral model to help inform his leadership and how he's going about engaging in this process. He often, you know, doesn't necessarily present the integral model to the people he's working with because there's often not a need to do that because the real evidence is in the fruits of the effort. And it's more about embodying an integral sensibility than necessarily showing someone all your conceptual framework as to what's informing you. And that's one of the things I really like about practitioners within the integral community is that the emphasis is really on how are you embodying this? Like, what does it look like in your life? What does it look like in your relationships with individuals in your community? And communicate the model, communicate the principles actually through your embodied presence with other individuals.
And maybe that's a good point for the last segment that we're going to here, and that is how we can pull this together some, Sean, to consider some of that the development that's involved in it from an individual standpoint, but what is really called for overall. Let's take a short break. We're back for the last segment. Sean and John continuing. Join us for the conclusion. Thanks.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network. You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoom Leadership.
Okay, back here, last segment this week on Zoomed. Sean, let's continue where we were. I think this is leading us into what I consider to be one of the most rich and deep portions of the discussion we'll have over coming weeks on Zoom. You mentioned the embodiment of an integral perspective. Can you say more what you're referring to there?
Yeah, and you know, this is one of the aspects of integral theory in general and that I really resonate with, and that is the importance of the individual to do their own interior work and exploration and development in order to kind of fill out the fullness of them as a human being, in order to facilitate their ability to be in full relationship with other human beings. And in many respects, it's about intimacy. At least that's a way I hold it, is that by working on my own development and working with other practitioners who are engaged in deepening their own capacity for inquiry, for self-reflection, for emotional intelligence, for the ability to suspend their own view so that they can hear in a much clearer way the viewpoints of others, particularly when those viewpoints challenge some of our most cherished views or beliefs, that capacity, those capacities, are really crucial and essential for bringing multiple perspectives together. Because if we can't, within our own embodied quality of being, hold multiple perspectives, meet and understand multiple perspectives, and represent and express multiple perspectives, then we're going to be hard-pressed to actually, in the world, with our activities of trying to solve complex solutions, be able to bring multiple perspectives together at the table. So it's really about generating a capacity to hold and inhabit multiple perspectives within yourself in order to be able to facilitate dialogue and interaction and solution building in the exterior world, because you yourself are able to model that in your interior world.
And John, this you're getting into the realm of capacities and capacity building, and I've actually written some on this myself, and there's a distinguishing point here between what some of what I've termed and others have called sort of the difference between horizontal development, meaning just building the skills and the more tangible competencies in life and increasing the knowledge base and so forth, which is much of what a lot of the education I've certainly seen over the years, particularly in corporate, the corporate world as I've been involved in it. But there's another sense when you're talking about this embodiment that there is the potentiality to grow and evolve and develop the worldviews you're describing, the traditional, the modern, postmodern, the integral worldviews, that there is a developmental nature to that.
Yeah.
And maybe you can say a little bit more of that. I know this is in a realm of your work and understanding that's very rich, too. Maybe you can help provide a little more meat on the bone for some of our listeners about what that's about.
Yeah, one of the aspects of those three worldviews that we were talking about before that a lot of developmental research and cross-cultural research highlights is that there's actually a movement from what, you know, with the traditional worldview, which tends to be more ethnocentric and kind of highlights the identity of the group as being primary. There's an expansion from that to the modern worldview, which is more of a sociocentric perspective that tends to emphasize universal rights and different kinds of rational understandings. And then that transforms and expands more into a world-centric viewpoint, which is often associated with postmodernism. And so there's this trajectory, this expansion of awareness and of identity from egocentric to ethnocentric to sociocentric to world-centric. And so it's only at world-centric or beyond world-centric, what I call in the book planet-centric, where one is really able to embrace all the worldviews because you yourself are not overly identified in an exclusive way with any one of those worldviews in particular. And so to understand this developmental progression is important and helpful, both in terms of informing our own engagement with practices and techniques to expand our own awareness and to become aware of when we become exclusively identified with any one position, so that we can loosen that identification in a way that allows us to remain open to viewpoints that are other than that particular position.
And that seems like when you're using the word becoming over-identified with a particular perspective, that we're also then starting to bring in the sense of or draw upon some of the work in psychology we've come to know over the years, particularly in the more recent years in the West, when we're understanding more of the nature of our own individual development and the development of our own ego and the ego structures and how that provides some context and a holding on to certain perspectives and how that needs and can be evolved and how that can be loosening. And at the same time, not only does it loosen the ability to see more perspectives, but it opens the potentiality that's involved.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering here, Sean, as we're closing in on our time, we've got a few minutes left here, but what is really called for? If we were really to think about the nature of how, as leaders, we might be putting our attention going forward, considering the multiplicity of worldviews that are beneficial, the nature of the development that's going on, and some of the examples you've really provided, if we were going to say what's called for, how might we begin to think about that from your standpoint?
Yeah, I think for me, a lot of it has to do with what we've just been talking about, and that being a deep engagement with our own evolution individually, and working with the ways we project onto the world or onto other people, understanding our fears, understanding anger and hatred, really, you know, doing deep inquiry in any variety of ways around those issues within ourselves, because we're going to be hard-pressed to expect other individuals who confront those very basic human aspects, we're going to be hard-pressed to expect them to do something that we ourselves haven't done. And so the more that we can do that deep inner work within ourselves and then bring to that our complex systemic understandings, I really think that therein lies a really important combination in addressing our global issues at any scale.
And so, as you're saying, then we've got our own development. We have an understanding of the complex systems, which seems to me to be a critical part of this.
Yeah.
Which is why Zoomed is actually, and it's our initial orientation, has begun to point more toward that, and is richly sort of an attuned way as we can to provide a larger picture. But it seems that at the same time, Sean, that the framework, an integral framework, can provide it a basis of commonality and understanding that can be helpful to build the kind of resonance with others that you described in your Canadian example.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the framework of, you know, who times how times what, such a great way to encapsulate, you know, these different layers of, you know, recognizing the importance of doing our own individual work in the who and interfacing and understanding multiple perspectives and worldviews, be they traditional, modern, postmodern, but also combining that with an appreciation of the variety of techniques and practices, the how, of how we can interface with the very complex world that's out there, and using the four quadrants to help understand and appreciate the interiors and exteriors of these issues that we face and will continue to face for the next, you know, 100, 200, 500 years.
Well, Sean, before we get too far out of this, let me just also point people to your book. I think it's a fabulous, really, opportunity to gain and to enrich the view that we're talking about here today. And let me remind you again, folks, it's Integral Ecology, Uniting Multiple Perspectives on the Natural World, published. It's an Integral Books publication, I believe, Sean, through Shambhala Publications. And I believe you can get it through Amazon. Is that correct?
It is, yeah. And just one thing to highlight about the book is there's an appendix in the book that maps out 200 distinct perspectives on the natural world, just to give you an idea of the multiplicity just within the context of ecology. It's extraordinary that we live in a world that's so dynamic and complex and ultimately mysterious.
And Sean, I think for that reason, I think it's so rich that anyone can pick this up and really get a huge amount of value and underpin the nature of where we can begin to look at the issues and bring our leadership to bear. And you're a fabulous young voice in this realm, and I really appreciate you coming on the show. So thanks this week, and I look forward. Maybe we can do this again and continue this conversation. Next week, let me point you to that, a big view on the monetary crisis, the financial system realities, and your wealth. We're going to the big picture. We feel like we really need this before we go too much further. It is a context of the wealth, not only of our individual wealth, but the wealth in society, perhaps the biggest potential transfer in history. You'll love it. Our guest is the highly regarded and provocative David Martin, Executive Chairman of MCAM, the International Leader in Financial Risk Management. You don't want to miss it. Join us next week. This is Zoomed. I'm John Schmidt. Have a great week. We'll see you again soon. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.